extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kalen Carr, David Goss, Matt Doyle. We made it! We're almost there. The regular season, but 1 week is left, unless you don't count that today, Monday, is actually the end of week 34, and I don't know, the math gets fuzzy from there, but we made it. How are you guys feeling? A lot at stake this week. 7 playoff spots for 12 teams. Seeding. Lots of seeding. Only the Rebs are locked in. The number one spot in the East, of course. And out West, home field advantage and a CCL spot that's been under-promoted probably by, I don't know, point the finger right at me. Us, because the top team in the West will get a CCL spot. So that could be one of three teams, Sporting, Sounders, or the Rapids. And if one of those teams that have already qualified wins MLS Cup, it would then go down in the Supporters Shield standing. So you want to be in pole position there. Doyle, I know that you probably watch, and no offense to any of the rest of us, more soccer than we do. How you feeling, man, to be at this point of the season right now, November 1st?
A little exhausted. And I have, like, eternal respect for the players and coaches and staff that have made it through this season, because, like, this was not a normal year. Like, this regular season started in mid-April. There have been, I think, infinite number of international breaks and tournaments is interspersed in between it. That's on top of Leagues Cup and CCL and everything else. So, yeah, I'm a little wrung out. I am happy we have made it to the end of the regular season intact. I am utterly shocked at some of the stuff that has happened in the standings. Like NYCFC going from the worst team in the world to 9 points in a week. Like, we're talking about them missing the playoffs on this show 10 days ago. And now we're talking about them maybe getting second seed in the Eastern Conference. Like, It's been a ride, man. It has been a hell of a lot to try to process week after week. And I look it back at some of the stuff that I write on the weekend, and like at the time I stand by it, but like stuff changes in this league so damn fast that like your head's got to be on a swivel, and it's all just kind of a blur.
Doyle, I went on vacation.
That's like the dark bags under the eyes take.
Yeah, like this turned into
Mr. Portugal, Mr. Lisbon. Oh, give me some recs. I can
6 days, and now I don't know what's going on. I don't know who any team in this league is anymore. You say that about NYCFC, I'm like, oh well, NYCFC is not going to make the playoffs. I come home, and the headline is NYCFC best team in the league. Tati, where it's at best form. We're just getting hot. I'm like, I thought Tati was in the trash bin. Where are we at now?
Golden boot now. Come on.
Yeah, golden boot.
He's sitting at the top.
And a best 11 midfielder. Midfielder?
Yeah. You got to find a way to fit him in, I guess. I don't know, man. I can't explain that one. Yeah, look, it's been a lot. It's going to be really fun. This whole next week is going to be a blast because we have Monday Night Football. Of course, tonight you've got Seattle Sounders and LA Galaxy. We'll talk about that more in a second. It's on 2DN on Twitter in English if you want to watch it. 10 p.m. Eastern. Maybe you're one of those folks that downloads Extra Time the moment that it comes out at 5 p.m. Eastern. We'll get you ready for that one. Tuesday, again, Vandy Sartini and the Vancouver Whitecaps. Andiamo, two hands on the table, going to LAFC, trying to stay above the line. LAFC trying to pull their way up above, despite the fact that Minnesota got a win and hurt their chances this weekend. We'll talk about that one as well.
Did you interview Vanny Sartini? Did I miss that?
Yes. It was amazing.
Was he great?
I'm sorry that you weren't here for that, because you would have truly been delighted by everything that Vanny Sartini represents as a human.
Did he remember meeting
coach.
Me at the hotel 2 years ago?
He did, yeah. You're he was lying. Like, he did. He was like, yeah, David's
you're
not
lying.
Here.
That's a lie.
He didn't say that.
You're a bad liar. Your kids are always going to know when you're lying.
That. Dude, I love that.
Santa isn't real, Cam. Santa isn't real.
I love that this is like the celebrity thing of like, did Vanny Sartini remember me?
Well, 2 years ago, I didn't know Vanny Sartini's name. So David was ahead of us to all this. Oh, by the way, speaking of some celebrity sightings this weekend, Halloween trick-or-treating last night, Sesinovic lives in my neighborhood. My wife unwittingly sent Cameron to the front door of Sesinovic's house in a Sounders hoodie, which Seth wasn't very happy about there. But I was dressed up as the Rock.
Wow.
So,
oh, no, wow.
It's, sorry. I just couldn't resist.
I could feel the heat from Portugal. I'm in Portugal, and I just felt a disturbance in the force. I open up my phone, and it's just Weeby trolling everywhere. He's like a bear going into a bee's nest.
Just tearing it up. All right, that's it. I'm full. But look, Decision Day 2021 coming on Sunday, November 7th. And guess who's doing your second screen watch-along show? You don't have to guess. It's us. We wouldn't talk about it if it wasn't us. But we are going to do this and do 5 hours. So we'll find a way to intersperse bathroom breaks and food and whatever else we need to survive those 5 hours. But it's going to be the four of us, special guests. I think we'll bring in Charlie Davies. We're going to try to bring in Patrice Bernier. I'm out trying to pull in other guests as well to just pop in. We're going to watch the games. We'll assign games. We'll have goal alerts on screen. You'll see the standings changing as it happens, as the results dictate. The scores will be there. I think we're going to have highlights for you as well. So think of it this way. You're going to watch your team's game, right? You're interested in seeing, you know, whether the Red Bulls can stay above the line or whatever it might
Montreal
be. Out west, you're
what a game.
You're an RSL fan, and you're like, oh, my God, is this going to happen for us this year? And we're going to be there watching every single other game. So when you need to know what's happening, boom, right there, second screen. It's put us on your phone, your laptop, whatever it is. If you've got a sick setup and you have another TV and you want the four of us just, I don't know, giving you live commentary over the top of whatever it is you're watching, we will be there for you during Decision Day. So anywhere you stream for MLS, Facebook, YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, hashtag Decision Day Live, come chat with us, get in the YouTube comments. We'll basically do mail throughout. We'll just try to find a way to kill 5 hours.
Out of all I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Done, is this the first time we've been mic'd up throughout? I feel like this...
I think so, because we've done like pre and post shows, yeah. I want to say, but I don't think we've ever done the full-on watch-along.
It seems risky, given our Decision Day behavior in the past, but I guess.
Oh boy! Should we go Brown Liquor Decision Day special or?
Aren't you in Central Time? Doesn't it start at like noon your time?
2:30. Hey, look, 2:30 on a Sunday. That's fine, man. That's fine. I'll get the cooler down in the basement. We'll get this thing going.
Dad energy here.
We'll upgrade the content. All right, let's get to it, guys. Be sure to check out Doyle's column, Steve Zakwani's takeaways at MLSsoccer.com. The call up has Young Cletus this week, so that should be cool. John Tolkien of the Red Bulls to talk about, you know, bleach jobs and tiger hand tattoos, etc. And then instant replay, I'm guessing you might be interested in that out there. There have been a few calls this weekend that deserve a little bit extra.
Hold up. Is Young Cletus really his nickname, or are you just calling him that?
I just call him that.
Okay. Because it's a good nickname. So that's good. Like, Your batting average isn't high, but like when you hit, you hit for power. That Young Cletus is really, really good for John Tolkien. That's good.
I mean, it's perfect, right? He has the personality. He's in New York with that. He's kind of got the New Jersey side.
How does he feel about Doritos?
I think it's good.
Does he really like Cool Ranch Doritos? Because that ended old Cletus's career, man.
Oh, boy. That's tough for me because I really enjoy a Cooler Ranch as well. So I have to tone back.
Maybe I think it may have ended your career as well, just 15 years ago.
Ended my career before it started. All right, let's talk about tonight. Seattle, LA Galaxy, we'll get to week 34. I guess this is week 34. We'll get to the rest of it in a second. 2DN, Twitter, as I said. If you're listening early, awesome. If you're not, maybe we'll look like geniuses here. Jordan Morris is, quote, going to feature against the Galaxy, says Brian Schmetzer. Also, Nico Ladero could start this game if his knee is not swelled up and feels good. Kaylin, I hate to make you the resident expert on recovery from injury and returns. What do you think about Jordan Morris coming back and featuring against the Galaxy? How would you use him? Charlie has said, I think on the last show, that he wouldn't even play Jordan Morris again this year. And what do you think about the addition of Nico to the Sounders? I mean, this has big playoff implications as well. As we said, Seattle trying to get the top spot and a CCL spot, and LA in seventh right now on 46 points. Yeah, they're not safe by any means.
Well, Morris has done this before as far as coming back towards the end of the season. And in the past, they decided to sit him out and actually not have him play. So he was training with the Sounders. They gave him that entire off season, and then he came back at the beginning of the next year and then really sort of hit it in June of that following year with the national team and in his MLS form. So they took a little bit more of a conservative approach. I think because of the circumstances of this, him being a little bit more mature, him understanding his body better, and him having been through this process before, they've decided to take a little bit. He has been training for 2 months, I believe, so That would have been, if you backdate that to probably about August-ish. So he's probably been through a lot of trainings. You know, he's gotten that first hit in training. He's gotten that first tackle. He's gotten involved to that degree. And now, you know, games will be different, but he also knows what it's like to come back from this. So I think the decision to play him, and then the other sort of elephant in the room, which is big, is that the World Cup is, you know, next year. Now it is later on, but I think he'll be motivated to try and get back into this national team at some point. And the earlier you start playing matches, the earlier that can become a reality. So I think this is a good time. It's a little bit tough because it's like, you know, it's right there and then the playoffs, but with his experience in the playoffs especially, I think that's a good name to be able to use at your disposal. For tonight's match, I'm sure he will be coming off the bench because nobody ever comes off ACL to start. and I think they'll try to find I think it'll depend on how the game goes, but I think they'll try to give him an opportunity to come into a situation where, you know, the game has opened up. It's later in the second half. Things can, it can be like a sort of a nice soft landing for him into a match. It's at home. You know, hopefully he's in good form. So I'm excited to see him come back. And I think he could, even at Jordan Morris for the last 10, 15 minutes, I think that's a role I'd still love to see him play even with the national team. And if he picks up anything more than that, it'd be great. But he's a game changer, and especially off the bench, his athleticism, which I wouldn't be too worried about in this case, just because he was starting from such a high place. So I think I'm happy for him, and I think it'll be a good extra piece for Seattle, of course, to add to the mix.
To Kalen's point also, because he mentioned last time how long it took Jordan Morris to come back, he also changed his game a ton in this time off. And so when he came back, I think part of it wasn't just physically, but it was him figuring out how he changes the way he plays the game, right? And he's become a more technical player. He comes inside more. He's willing to play on the ball, not just in open space and run at guys. And so I think that's what's interesting now is, like, he doesn't need to be the fastest guy on the field at all times to change the game. And that's what's interesting for Seattle, is that where he can still potentially have some effect this year. And then the last point is just, there's no pressure. You're like one of the best teams in the Western Conference. He hasn't touched the field. So it's not like you need to risk him. It's not like you need to push him. If he doesn't feel good, you can take him off. And the thing they're playing for is potentially a first round bye. And so you can get even more time to get him in. It's all obviously positive for Seattle. And it's pretty absurd that they're in the place they're in without this guy all year, and with where Nico Lodero's been as well.
The only thing I will add to this as far as coming back from injury is, generally when you come back, you're so excited that you can actually find, like, you, if you get off to especially in game one or game two, you get a goal or something, you can really carry that form for a little bit of time. You inevitably do sort of crash down to earth at some point and then have to find your way to build back up to where your form actually is. But for a sprint, which is what, you know, the end of the season may be for the Sounders, I think he could, if he can get off to a good start, actually, he might be able to surprise himself and maybe some other people as well. And then you build back maybe towards the off season and sort of get that base under your legs heading into the following season. So that'd be best case scenario.
I'm not sure I completely agree about pressure, Dave, just because it's sort of the recent form for Seattle and how they're relying on these players to come back from injury, whether it be Rui Diaz or Lodero or Morris, and the stakes for them every single year and their expectations.
But he's the third on that list with a team that's
on him,
full of
on Jordan Morris in particular. I completely agree.
Yeah, you need Nico
within the entire team
for sure. You need Rui Diaz, but I think that. But then when let's say you bring back Rui Diaz, now you've pushed Freddie back to the bench consistently. You can bring Will Bruin along as you need to. Like, it just. Yeah, as you add options, it just becomes.
You were gone. Will Bruin might be hurt again.
See, no, I know he's hurt.
Everything changes.
But don't they have to bring him back in?
That's true. They also have an international break to rest as well, no matter if they get a bye or not. How much pressure is on LA, though, Doyle? I thought that, like, I figured Minnesota doesn't win this weekend, and then it's basically a, win and you go to the playoffs for LA. But that's not exactly the case here. If they don't get a result and RSL and LAFC do midweek, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, and it'll all come down to that home game that they have against Minnesota United next weekend on Decision Day. It's a huge game. It is the It is the smaller of the two games. It is the less consequential. LA could do themselves a real solid here by getting a point or 3 points. But either way, it doesn't change the fact that they are probably going to need to beat Minnesota United next weekend at home in order to qualify for the playoffs. And coming up short of that mark would be kind of devastating given how good the vibes have been this year for the Galaxy, and how stuff like, you know, Chicharito playing like the Chicharito they thought they were going to get, and you know, Julian Araujo, like, just taking the type of massive step that you always want to see from young players, like, all of that stuff will be overshadowed. It'll be overshadowed for the Galaxy.
Oh, that's a bad omen.
Right?
The buzzer omen for the Galaxy, really poor omen. Just I don't even think we should probably stop talking about it. Andre says the bell tolls for the Galaxy, and ooh.
Yeah.
Tough.
I mean,
tough. You said, though, that this is the less of the two games. How about the second one on Tuesday, LAFC Toronto? Sorry, LAFC Vancouver. How could I do Vanni Sartini like that?
Yeah, right. By the way, Vanni Sartini went as Mario for Halloween. It was on his Instagram. A buddy sent it to me, which is like, that's just a fantastic costume for him. obviously, this is, you need 3 points or your season's over if you're LAFC. And none of us thought that LAFC was going to be in that position. And now they've obviously had bad luck in terms of finishing, awful luck in terms of injuries. They've missed, you know, their three best players or three most important players, I guess I'll say, for most of the year. They also have had bad luck with a lot of their moves, and they're kind of like paying reaping the whirlwind, so to speak, in terms of overvaluing a bunch of young imports and maybe undervaluing a bunch of pretty steady domestic guys. But they, like, this is it for LAFC. If you don't get 3 points, you're not going to get into the playoffs. You know, and I know mathematically they wouldn't be eliminated, but, like, they would be eliminated if they don't get this done.
Weeby, I've got two good narratives for you.
Yeah, give me some narratives.
First one is Ryan Gault scored his first goal before his first start against LAFC. I think it was the second win that started the Vanni Sartini era. So you got that going for you, juice-wise, for Vancouver.
We're a full-on era right now for Vanny.
Yeah, 100%.
Man. We are just lock it in, baby.
Second is, what would it mean, as Doyle said, they're not mathematically eliminated. But remember when Bob Bradley was going to take over Vancouver? That was going to be the job that he was going to take and rechange that club. And what if it all ended with a loss against Vancouver all the way on the backside?
Ooh,
we're not saying Bob Bradley's going anywhere, but we don't know where he'll be next season. And LAFC may not make the playoffs. That's some narrative for you.
And maybe there's a little Canadian connection, too, because I don't know. Maybe Toronto FC looks at Toronto. I'm just saying. I'm just speculating here. Monday and Tuesday, MLS soccer, of course, a ton of playoff implications. Let's get to what happened over the weekend, and I'll try to run you through real quick where we stand as far as the standings go. We know in the Western Conference, you got Kansas City, Seattle, and Colorado. X is next to their name. Four open spots. The Timbers, 49 points in that fourth spot. They'd have a home game right now, but Minnesota have 48. Vancouver have 47 in two games. LA have 46 in two games. RSL, 45 in two games. LAFC, 44 in two games remaining. RSL and LAFC below the line. Over in the Eastern Conference, you have four spots now locked up. Philly got in. They're second, 53 points. Nashville right there on 53 as well after a draw, controversial one against Orlando. We'll talk about that in a second. NYCFC have the X with 50. They have a home game right now. Nobody wants to go to Yankee Stadium. Orlando, Atlanta, New York rounded out with D.C., Columbus, and Montreal chasing all in the Eastern Conference, varying number of games. It's a little more mixed up over on that side. Let's start with maybe the biggest result of the weekend. We mentioned it. Minnesota needed to win at home. Otherwise, it was going to be bad news for them. They got it done, 2-1 against Sporting Kansas City. They went down early. Kyrie Shelton with that early goal, and then Minnesota United rollback. Frankapane, and then also Reynoso with the Panenka. Plus 31.8%, better chance to make the playoffs after this win, up to 73 per Sports Club Stats, which is a very interesting website that basically runs all the probabilities, all the different permutations of results, etc. LAFC were hurt by this one. How good is Reynoso?
Yeah.
I mean, we go back to last year. It's like Reynoso, he might be the best player in the league. Like, he might be. He's not going to be the MVP, but he might be the best player, Doyle.
I mean, he's one of the most fun to watch, right? And he's a throwback, you know, 80s, 90s style South American number 10 who just conducts everything with the ball at his foot. And he's just like, he's a wizard, man. He sees passes that very few other players see. And he, you know, when Minnesota runs out of ideas, they just get the ball to him. And they run out of ideas all the time, by the way. They just get the ball to him. and he makes something of it.
I enjoy the moments when he gets the ball and, like, is surrounded by three guys. And you can just see the wheels start turning for him. And it's like, okay, what's he going to do?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing that makes him so good is that the wheels started turning for that 3 seconds before he got the ball. Like he knows what he's doing before he gets there, which is why he makes the game look so easy, and he elevates the play of everyone around him, which is why I kept saying, just wait till they have, you know, something close to their starting lineup and a healthy Reynoso, and then, you know, this team is going to start putting together a good run, and they're 3-1-1 in their last five games. It hasn't always been pretty. I think they still struggle at times in terms of just progressing play from the back, and that's going to be a big issue for them next weekend against the Galaxy, because Ozzie Alonso's out for that game. Ozzie Alonso picked up a yellow card. I thought it was a little soft. And now is going to be serving a yellow card accumulation suspension. So that is going to be tougher for them next weekend than it otherwise would have been. But in this game, they had zero problems playing through Sporting. They just annihilated them. It was very similar to last year's playoff performance. A few fewer transition moments, but just in terms of the ease with which they got the ball to Reynoso in the spots where Reynoso wanted the spots, that's the type of performance that we've been kind of waiting to see from Minnesota all year, and it was a good one, and it was a necessary one. And if on Sporting's side, it was a really worrying one, because they were missing a couple of pieces, but this was pretty close to full strength Sporting KC team, and they just got rolled.
So the one thing that I noticed from Minnesota, and I've noticed over the last few weeks, one, Ozzie Alonso's been huge in midfield, you know, behind Reynoso.
He's been awesome
to do what he wants to do, and he puts out fires. I mean, there was a couple of times where Will Trapp actually turned the ball over, and Ozzie Alonso, you could see him like run back, clean it up, and be like, come on, dude, really? You're going to have me running out here. But the other thing that Doyle mentioned last year's playoff run was Kevin Molino's threat down that left side was a game changer for Minnesota, but also his willingness to come inside when Reynoso wants that space. Lowe does it really well. Finley doesn't really want to come inside, and he isn't as dangerous. And the first goal comes from Reynoso goes out to the touchline, picks up the ball, and Fragapane's in the middle of the box to eventually have the ball fall to him and score. And those are those moments that where Minnesota, now you've got two guys out wide who are happy to go wherever Reynoso's not. And it allows Reynoso that full freedom to pick it up wherever he wants to be dangerous, wherever he targets a guy and create. And so that flow across those three have been really dangerous and really impressive. And I think you're going to see over the next year or two, because it feels like all three of them are going to be there for a little while, you know, guys that fit perfectly together and are some of the most dangerous wingers, and then obviously Reynoso in the league.
Kalen, how many the stones that it takes to go Panenka in a 1-1 game when you desperately have to win?
Yeah.
And not just like but it's the most delicate Panenka. You know what I mean? Like,
it's almost the right choice against Tim Melia. Because, in terms of percentage, Melia is the greatest penalty stopper in MLS history, right? So, like, you can't throw him the fastball because he saves the fastball. So you got to throw the Ephus pitch, I guess.
And it was actually his first penalty all season, too. So it wasn't like he was and Minnesota United's, I think, first penalty all season.
Wow.
They had one other penalty this year that I believe was missed by, I want to say, Ramon Avila.
Digging in the haystack.
No, this was on the broadcast. I think 12 men are. Okay, I think 12 men at it. But it was, I was kind of shocked when I heard that, and I said, "Oh well, this is his first one. So he doesn't really have, like, it makes it even that much more impressive that it's not like he's just been banging in PKs all year. And there's film that Mealy has been watching where he knows that he likes to hit the right side hard and low. And this was just going to be like, you know, hit him up with the changeup. But that's what you're trading on in that moment too, right? Where you're saying the weight of the game, the weight of the moment, like the pressure here, season, you know, essentially on the line in a lot of ways, or the playoffs. And you're sort of banking on Melia to feel that moment, or the goalkeeper to feel that moment, and to try and, you know, be moving on the line. Because you have to sell that too. You have to go hard and then fully stop. And yeah, it was big. I mean, I still think for Minnesota United, and Sporting Kansas City did not do a good job of this, was just sort of condensing that space underneath. And that's where Reynoso likes to operate. And when you look at just that entire Minnesota United team, most of those players like the ball a little bit underneath. Ludd likes the ball to feet. Ethan Finley might be the only one who didn't play in this one that likes to sort of stretch the field and get behind to open up that gap. And I think they'll need him back for just if anything, just that, just to sort of stretch the field and create space for Reynoso. Because if Sporting Kansas City did a better job of sort of clogging that middle, and I know Reynoso's comfortable under two or three under pressure, but being physical, getting underneath right there and clogging that zones, Minnesota United, who knew, doesn't like getting in behind. Fragapane prefers the ball, I think, at feet, running at players versus sort of stretching the field. So I still think that's an area of concern as far as how Minnesota United continues to find that space. But then again, we saw last year when Reynoso gets hot at the right time, just one player can really change the picture for this team. So it was a massive win. And it was started off in a terrible way, where it was Metiner just sort of has a moment that you're like, oh, this cost them the season, where he's just not thinking and lets the ball run back, and they really dug their way out of it before halftime. So it was a big win for them.
So Weeby,
season flickering before their eyes, by the way, 86 minutes.
You asked if Reynoso is the best.
Reynoso.
You said something about, yeah, for sure. You asked about Reynoso being the best player. Is Johnny Russell, especially with Vela out, is he the number one when he touches the, when he gets on the ball, you like get out of your seat player right now in MLS?
I think
Hany Mukhtar right now.
Yeah, his like ability to just be extremely direct and effective with that is really impressive, and it's not just ball at my feet. Like, I thought his knockdown header for Shelton was one of the sort of like underrated plays of the weekend. To recognize that moment, to execute it brilliantly right to his, literally to on his foot as he peels into the box. We've had this discussion here, and we have some mail from Colt Hoffman. His first question is about SKC's defense. I think Charlie was the one that was saying he's not sold. Sixth best in the league, says Colt, to go with the second most goals scored. But tell me again how their defensive frailties worry you, and that Seattle has so many more weapons than them.
I'm not sure Seattle has so many more weapons than them. I'll answer for Charlie. I'm not sure Seattle has so many more weapons than Sporting KC, because a fully healthy Sporting KC with Shaloy and Pulido and Johnny Russell and Gariquinda coming out of center, like, that is a fearsome attack. But yeah, their defense is really worrying. Like, they do not do as good a job of getting pressure to the ball. And like, against mediocre teams, okay, it's fine. Against good teams can play through that Sporting KC defense, and suddenly you scramble their midfield a little bit. If they're not getting pressure to the ball, then the center backs have to make plays in the open field, and they really can't. Like, not good at that. They have been organized and resolute and super well drilled and tough to break down all year long, but there's like, they can only push that so high. At some point, good teams can play through that, win the physical battles, make the field big, which is exactly what Minnesota did last year in the playoffs against them, and score some goals. And like, honestly, Sporting was lucky this was only 2-1. This could have been, you know, 3 or 4 to 1. And like, the shots, I think it was 15-4 on the day. You know, expected goals was around 2 to 0.5. Like, it was not like, it was a, this was a wake up call for Sporting Kansas City. And like, I know Ilie's done a really good job filling in, and you know, they want to control a game with the ball, and Ilie at center back is a good way to do that. But they got to get Yusamat Marin in and healthy. They need him partnering Fontas in the back. They need Ilie in central midfield, keeping it a little bit tighter. If they don't have that, I do think they would end up being, whether they finish the regular season atop the Western Conference or not, I think they would end up being in trouble against the likes of Minnesota or the Sounders, or even basically any team in the West that could, you know, sort of blow up the midfield and make it a game of transition.
Like Portland.
We have a question in the mailbag, which we're going to hit here in a second. I think we can all agree that Reynoso tackle from Amadou Dia was a red card. Didn't get called a red card. Instant
multiple
replay.
Games.
Told you, hey, that should have been a red card. That's an awful, awful, awful scissor tackle. Way late. Taking out a plant leg. So that's tough. That's tough. Let's keep it rolling, though, here. One note from that game, though. Daniel Shaoui, who had the ankle injury. And in Hungary, they said it would be a month. Don't trust those reports out of Hungary, man. It wasn't a month. Hungary does not have the inside track on Daniel Shaoui's health. He played 36 minutes in this one, so that's good news for Sporting Kansas City with Alan Pulido out as well, and Yusamat Marin not featuring here. They could use as much recovery time as they can get ahead of the playoffs. Red Bulls 1, Montreal 0. They started the day in basically the exact same place, outside the playoffs, both with 31 games played, facing off against each other. It was like the perfect matchup, and it was crushing for Montreal at the end. They have now lost, I think, in stoppage time in 2021. This is Montreal fans. I will never stop having that pop in my mind. 8 points in stoppage time in 2021.
Ugh.
8 points. That's pretty rugged. One against in Atlanta, two in Chicago, two in Nashville, two in Toronto, and then one in New York over the weekend. That's a lot of points from that position. What did we see from this one? Do we have any strong takes?
I mean, Montreal's hanging on for dear life. We've been saying that for 2 months, right? They have done, I think Wilfred Nancy's done a fantastic job giving that team an identity. They are really good at using the ball to kind of organize the game the way they want it, and then finding either Georgi Mihailovic or Joaquin Torres in the half spaces, while the strong side wing back, whether it's on the left or right, is sort of bombing forward on the overlap. And once they have that pattern of play, they're able to, I think, advance the ball pretty effectively into the final third and create chances. The problem is, you know, they have lost a bunch of key guys in terms of, you know, like Mason Toy. They were much better this year when Mason Toy was on the field. Romel Kyoto has been awesome when he's been available. Wanyama has been in and out of the lineup over the past month as well. And like, this is not one of the most talented teams in the league, even with those guys. So without those guys, you know, match winners or, you know, guys in central field like Wanyama who control the game, it's been a struggle. And I think they've got one win in their last 8 games now. In this game, in the first half, I thought they played pretty well. And they handled the intensity of the Red Bull, Red Bulling, you know, energy drink soccer out there. But the second half, like, there was one team on the field. Like, Montreal barely crossed the midfield stripe, and it was just, like, the Red Bulls were like a dude with a hammer just, like, banging away at a door until the door broke down. And, like, this is what the Red Bulls have done. This is what they did last week to the Crew when Nealis got the 87th minute winner. And that's what they did this week. And the whole idea behind Red Bull Soccer is you control the game not by connecting passes. You control the game by inducing 50-50s in the attack, in the attacking third. And if you create enough of those and you put the opposing defense under that much literal physical pressure to win the physical matchup time and time again, eventually they will lose one. And you will be like one pass away or two passes away from a one-touch finish in the box. And that is exactly how this game was decided. Like, Andres Reyes cleared the ball from his own half to the top of the 18, and Patrick Klimala did a wonderful job of out-muscling Rudy Camacho, controlling and then like turning, getting to the end line, across, you know, to the back post. Caden Clark heads it over to Fabio, and that's 1-0, and that was it. And it was like, It's a miracle late goal in the sense that, like, Red Bull would have been in trouble, maybe, in terms of their playoff hopes if they didn't find it. But, like, the Red Bulls earned their miracle because they completely dominated that half, man. And they got the goal out of the exact blueprint that they came into the game with. Like, that's a team that is very clear about its identity now.
I'm very, very entertained by the idea of, like, Red Bull soccer being you see a door, instead of trying the knob, you just take a hammer.
Yeah, you just take a sledgehammer to it. And you just
you're like, I don't even care if this thing is unlocked, yep. Man. We're beating this door down. And we have a question here from Justin Geis. It says, which team on the playoff bubble will be the biggest disappointment if they miss out? Who is that team? Where would Montreal rank?
I think Montreal has already had a successful season, even if they come up short here in this week.
So I agree with you, Doyle, except one thing. If they don't beat Houston on Wednesday...
That's fair.
I think that would be a heartbreaking way to host Orlando on decision day after everything you've been through the last two years, and to have lost the opportunity against a team that's
at
already
home
eliminated. I think that will be heartbreaking. So for them, to me, it's like win on Wednesday, and then whatever happens, even as heartbreaking as it will be, I agree with Doyle that they're going in the right direction. They have pieces they like. Nonce had a good year. They got back home. All these things.
I'd say Columbus.
Pop quiz.
It's got to be Columbus for me. Just not having, just being the defending champions with that roster, Zeller Rayan, one of the best players in the league, and they're still climbing, they're still fighting. They've got a shot, but I feel like of Montreal, DC, new managers, not a lot of experience. You know, and then just how wide open it is. If Columbus misses out, I feel like they have the most to lose. They
to
have
me,
the most at stake.
By the way, here's the pop quiz for you that I was trying to throw in. No team has not won on the road this year other than the Dynamo. The Dynamo are 0-10-6 on the road. So if you're Montreal, you don't win that game, and you're the first loss.
It feels like
that would be rough.
To be real, we've all been doing this long enough. It feels like a thing that happens in MLS is like we're all in on this team, and then they lose at home to Houston for the first. It was the same when the Galaxy didn't make the playoffs that year to RSL and all that stuff. By the way, the Galaxy would be my answer if they don't make the playoffs.
The answer
I think
for
it's clearly LAFC. It's LAFC by far. I'm sitting here with a double prediction in the preseason for LAFC.
That's your fault.
And
that's
it could be the
fault.
That is my fault. But that is where their perceptions were and their expectations were.
But then.
Because Carlos Vela had done what he did in CCL. He was back, quote unquote. You had Rossi. You had Brian Rodriguez. You had this incredible, you had Bob Bradley after they'd missed out on MLS Cup. You had huge expectations, and this could be the end.
But Weeby,
we don't know it will be,
not,
but it could be the end.
Not from week one on. Yours is preseason and narrative prediction based on it. From week one on, if the Galaxy go from where they were over the course of the year down to not making the playoffs, I think of everyone, maybe Minnesota as well, in this race, that would be the biggest disappointment.
I would say they have that. Both those teams do, but I actually think Orlando City would be the bigger disappointment.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because for the entire year, been saying like, okay, they're not playing great soccer, but once they get DK healthy, and as long as Nani's rested, and they got Pereira out there rested, and they got Jackson Mendez back, and that really good defense, and
Moutinho.
International caliber goalkeeper, like, okay, once they have all that, then they're going to turn it on. And look, they've been tough to beat for the past month. They weren't tough to beat for a while. They've been tough to beat for the past month, but they haven't been good. And even in this weekend's, should have been a win, frankly, over Nashville. Orlando City were not good, and now they're coming into the final week of the season, where if things go wrong for them this week in terms of Montreal getting it done against Houston, maybe Atlanta get a result, Atlanta and the Red Bulls play each other, but one or the other of those two teams win, and then one or the other of those two teams win again this weekend, then Orlando goes into the final game of the season needing a result on the road against a desperate Montreal team and could end up missing out on the playoffs by a single point. Like that would be like
Orlando fans are like, stop talking, Doyle. Don't talk anymore. Like, we've had enough pain this weekend.
Like,
let's just jump into it.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna skip straight down to the Orlando Nashville section, Kaylin, and I want your opinion on this. on the final play of the game. Well, is it the final play? The final game.
It was
play
the 94th minute
really
of
truly,
a 94-minute
yeah,
game.
That truly matters. It's a goal that Andres Pereira scores that's counted on the field. Alan Chapman goes to the monitor at the urging of VAR Jose Carlos Rivero. He reverses it, calls a foul on Daryl DK on Alistair Johnson. Daryl DK and Alistair Johnson are going for a loose ball on the goal line because your preseason newcomer of the year, Alexandre Pato, bangs the ball off the crossbar and off
who's?
The goalkeeper.
Who's? Yours.
Our. Collectively our newcomer of the
Extra
year.
Extra time driven by Pato.
I did exactly. not. I did
I feel
not
like he thought about
that.
That as he stepped up for that set piece, too. He was like, you know what?
Well, he ripped
I
it.
I may
this
not
is
have
for
been
Weeby.
Here, but I feel like
this is
I got to
Weeby.
Do this for Weeby. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
You should have.
Ball's there. Loose ball. They both come in for it. Daryl DK does get the back of Alistair Johnson's leg, but Alistair Johnson, I'm not going to put any of my bias in here. TBD on whether he's playing that ball or not, or just trying to stop Daryl DK. Pereira cleans it up, scores. They go wild in Orlando. Now they're going wild the other direction because it got taken off and they lost 2 points in their point of view. Should they have lost those 2 points? Instant replay, my take's there. I'm curious your take as a player, what you think about that play.
No chance. No chance. No chance, no chance. And
I never weigh in on calls. It was a horrendous call.
It was horrendous.
So bad.
Think about it this way, too. And because I think a part of being a referee, we've turned this into some sort of math problem. But part of being a referee is to understand the moment in the match, the feeling, the location on the mat, the location of the game, of the spot of the foul or the, you know, altercation or whatever it might be. And it's like, to me, from a player's perspective, you're fighting for everything, right? Every inch, every scrap, you're trying to get in the playoffs, you're trying to get seeding, you're trying to get a home game. Like, it's all on the line right here at the end. And it's like the equivalent of like the softest foul at the end of a match of going to the paint, like LeBron going to the paint and trying to get the softest call to decide a game. And I'm like, no, let the players decide the game. And both of these guys are going to go our bat. Johnson, DK, they're going to battle, throw everything they can at the line. Like, of course, there's always a line there where you can't cross it. But both of those guys to me look like it was a 50-50. They're scrambling for the ball. Neither of them really got it. And then the ball sort of lands there and Pereira steps up and gets it. So, look, the referee didn't call. The other thing, too, is if you're just looking at it from this sort of
protocol
perspective.
Yeah, clear. And that's got to be clear and obvious for them to reverse the call because the call on the field was goal.
Yeah, that was the call. So I don't see how when you go look at the monitor and you go back, and even when I watch it in the like slowest of slowest frames and I'm watching whose foot maybe hit his foot or was his foot being put in front of his foot to get it, that to me is not clear and obvious to say, oh, no, you got to take that one off the board. I just don't see it.
It's where replays let you down.
Shout out though to this Orlando City social media team who put out the one angle where it looks like
exactly.
it was maybe a foul.
The detectives are like, we need the murder weapon. We need a smoking gun. And Orlando are like, here you go.
But it's where replays let you down, right? Because if you take in isolation the Orlando City clip and you can go on Orlando City's Twitter feed and watch it, you're like, oh yeah, that's an obvious foul. Daryl DK kicks Alistair Johnston. Boom. But that's not what happened. And when you watch the rhythm of the play, DK's making an attempt at the ball. Alistair Johnston puts his body in front of it. It's the same as me winding up for a shot. You put your foot down in between me and the ball. You are not making an attempt on the ball just because I kicked you. And it's that moment that I think in isolation on replay is slightly confusing to watch. And it's what's frustrating. One, that it was recommended. And then two, that it was brought back. Because when you watch the actual play in live action, and then you take that context to watch the replay, there's no way you're making that call.
And it's such a great moment, too. The ball is off the post. It's laying on the goal line. Like, players are sliding in trying to get it. Who's going to win the game? And then you have this moment where it goes nuts. I don't know. For Orlando City, especially when you talk about the context of it where, you know, and this is what MLS is with these wild swings where you could end up being a top seed with a home game to then suddenly finding yourself in Montreal fighting just to make the playoffs the next week. Whew, that's a wild swing.
Now, just to be clear, I think Orlando, they've won like two of their last six games. Nothing's going to happen to them because of this call, right? They were supposed to be, to me, the second best team in the Eastern Conference this year. It's all the things Doyle said they've done wrong. So you can't just come back and say, well, this one caller, we're there. If they miss the playoffs, that means they are a point out of the playoffs. And if that's their reality, a lot more went wrong this year than just that play. But
that sucks. I completely agree with that. But at the same time, that is two
yeah,
points.
I disagree.
And they would be in fourth place.
And
like that,
Caleb, you have 34 games. First of all,
we're all hyping up decision day and saying why it's so important. Everything matters. It's on the line. And we're saying every game matters. We're trying to emphasize the regular season. And you're saying watch every match if you're a fan.
Yeah.
And you show up or you watch on TV and you're saying this match matters this much. And then you're saying actually it doesn't really matter.
No, but Caleb, the point is every game that they did not win in June, July, and August, and all the points they've dropped from winning positions, and all the games that they were up 1-0 and didn't score again, because that's been most of their issue this year, are as important as what happened yesterday in Orlando.
But I just want to make one point. We're getting to the point now where it's like the playoffs. It's we're getting to the point where it's like single elimination. Every match, every call, every minute, that all matters. And yeah, you can say, yeah, they've lost points here and there, whatever it is. But it's like, now is the time where you show up and you reconcile that, or you show what type of team you are. And to me, they showed up and did everything they could and then had this one taken away.
Two quick things. So, one, that should be the ad for the playoff, for the decision day. Every moment, every match, every minute. Also, Dom Kinnear over here. All matters is the playoff run.
I just want to make two quick points. One is that last month when these two teams met, Nashville and Orlando got an equalizer in 3 minutes into the second half stoppage time via a corner kick, an own goal off a corner kick, when the corner kick actually shouldn't have been awarded. Like, that should have been a goal kick.
I don't know. We checked that play on IR. It looked to me like it was a fine call.
You think so? Okay.
I thought so.
All right. I thought it was wrong. I guess I will leave it to the experts. I mean,
it's one of those where you could easily have different of opinion on it, but it wasn't so obviously wrong that I would look at that and be like, no chance they really screwed that up.
Fair enough.
I thought this wasn't from my like point of view, I was like, that definitely could have come off mayor.
Removed ball don't lie situation.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in karma. I think things have a tendency to even out over the course of a season. But that's one. And two is like, okay, so we went in on this game, on this call, and deservedly so. Orlando City still goes into the final weekend in complete control of their own destiny. If they get a point against a team that they are frankly much more talented than, then they are into the playoffs. That's all they have to do. And like, it's not ideal. They should be in already, but if they are anything close to the team that we thought that they could be, and still, I still honestly think that they could be in the playoffs, then they'll just go out and get the job done. Like, that's kind of what we all expected from Orlando City to start the season. That's what they have the talent to be. That's what they have the experience to be. And that's what they should do next weekend in Montreal.
I'm going to start passing around games here for quick takes. Who wants Columbus, D.C.? Who wants it? The Miguel Berry Show. Dave, it's all you. D.C., are they done? Is this it? Over? Fiend?
Are they cooked? Is that what I'm supposed to go to?
Yeah. Are you burying them? I mean, Charlie would literally bust out the
construction
equipment and just pile it
on. I just think the frustrating thing for DC over the last month has been, one, the self-inflicted wounds. I mean, you just look at this game. It's three unforced errors from defenders to give up three goals in which they didn't dominate the game. You could say Columbus controlled good stretches of it, but Columbus wasn't super goal dangerous in those moments. And so you're up 1-0. Paul Ariola scores in the second minute. You're going into halftime. Great. And Tony Alfaro just slides for no reason and gives up a penalty. And now it's 1-1 going into halftime. And then you look at the other two goals. Andy Nahar bails out at midfield to try and slide away a pass. Why? And that's a breakaway for Pedro Santos. And then Donovan Pines wins a ball back and then plays it on the ground across the field in his own 18 straight to a Columbus player for the goal. And so that's what's frustrating to me for DC is they have a clear identity. They know who they are. I think they've not been goal dangerous. And Ola Kamara, now it's been six games without a goal. And in this one, he had a great opportunity in the box, one-on-one with the keeper, misses, another chance where he could have slid it over, to, I think it was Gressel, and instead tries to go 1v1 and misses as well. The chance was there for DC, and this reminds me of the game that they played against Nashville, I think it was, 2 weeks ago, where, again, they dominated at home, they created all the chances, and they couldn't finish. And so I think for DC, they're probably going to miss the playoffs, and they're going to look at it and say, we know who we are now, we're going in the right direction, we have something to build towards, but they left points on the board that they could have taken to go to the playoffs.
TBD about their future, too. I mean, Hernan Losada, as we said, is saying, hey, I need better players. We need to invest. I have some ideas.
Well, I think he looks
about
at
what
Tony Alfaro and Donovan Pines playing center. Or Tony Alfaro played left wing back in this game. I have no idea how that happened. Sorry,
I mean,
I'm back into it again.
Kevin Paredes Kevin Paredes got injured is how it happened.
Yeah,
and like, look,
understood.
I think Losada has done a great job this year. There are a worrying number of soft tissue injuries in this DC United team. And that's been the case even before Losada, but I think it kind of reached ahead this year. And they have to figure that out, because like Edison Flores hasn't played in a month. Jordi Reyna just got back after missing a month. Paredes got injured this week. We know Paul Ariel has been in and out of the lineup. Russell Knauss is out. There's something more. They have to figure that out.
It almost sounds like a conversation we had earlier in the year.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about DC spending money, but like, they did spend money on Flores. He has barely played in 2 years. So it's, you know, there needs to be investments. I think those investments probably go beyond just the squad and maybe into some of the off-field locker room stuff.
Here's another theory for the investigation to start at. You play every day with Felipe in practice. Watch out.
It says soft tissue.
I don't think he's going anywhere. He earned a spot.
Sure.
Just
he's a legend.
Only thing I'll add in is part of the experience of, you know, of being a manager is understanding how to get your team playing well at the right times of year. And if you're being critical to begin the year, they were poor, had a ton of injuries, and they're finishing the year on a slide, ton of injuries as well. And then when you look at systems and tactics, they haven't adjusted. So if you're playing, it's one thing if you're saying, okay, I don't have Paredes, I'm going to play Alfaro, or I'm playing, I have to play Andy Nahar as like a right center back. We're going to switch, but we're not going to change our tactics, and we're just going to continue to press and take risks. We saw that risk that Nahar takes on the play there. That's not a risk that you take as a center back. So you begin to understand that sometimes, yeah, you want to play this attacking pressing style or whatever, this all energy system, that's great. And it got them really good results throughout a stretch of the year and made them really entertaining and fun to watch. But it's different if you're playing with Alfaro, and it's different than when you're playing with Paredes. Or it's different based on who you have available to you. And as the injuries come, they haven't really switched their tactics, which you can say they have a system, they have an identity, and Losada has brought them that, and it's made them really exciting. But ultimately, when it's come down to some of the results at the end of the year, it seems like they're trying to continue to play the same way without the same pieces, and that's not getting them results right now.
Yeah, it looks like it's not going to be a playoff ending for DC, but we shall see. It's definitely not for San Jose. I made the joke in the past, Matias Almeida is like MLS peyote. Well, this game was. It's a 4-3 game against RSL. 7 goals in this one. Every time these two teams play, it seems to be insane. Just like close your eyes, use your imagination, and that's probably what's going to happen. Doyle, this was a huge loss for RSL at home against a non-playoff team in a game in which they basically just opened it up and just said, all right, well, I guess we're going to stop Cade Cowell in the open field, and then they just didn't.
It was funny. They got Quake's brain, right? Like, they spent the first 30, 40 minutes of this game just having acres of space. Like, San Jose basically had no midfield, and so RSL had acres of space, and there was run out after run out. Like, Justin Glad dribbled 95 yards upfield and set up a perfect chance for Demir Krylock. Justin Miram was out there looking like, you know, Ronaldinho. It was ridiculous, and it felt like RSL just lost their minds, and we're like, okay, if San Jose's playing like this, we'll play like this. And their midfield shape completely fell apart. They gave up a couple of bad goals on set piece, or the Wando goal on a set piece. Like, they should have done a lot better on that. As soon as that happened, RSL just lost their minds. And the final 50, 55 minutes of this game played directly into San Jose's hands. And San Jose's, that means chaos ball. And it was like, it was a throwback because San Jose came out and they man-marked in this game. They haven't man-marked in a game since June or July. Like, they've been a much more boring and, I would argue, more effective team.
Oh, Mateus is going down swinging.
Oh, baby. Yeah. Like, if these are the last days of Mateus, he's going out on a shield, and I respect that. And it just ended up being, like, one of the most typically chaotic Quakes games of the Almeida tenure. And it was, you know, it's not quite the nail in the coffin for RSL, but it might be a nail in the coffin, because this is one they should have won. They still are in control of their own destiny because they have a game in hand. So they have
it's Portland at home, and then they're at Kansas City on December.
Portland at home. So if they win both of those games, they will make the playoffs. But they just used up their wiggle room by losing at home to a San Jose team that was already eliminated.
And that's 4-1 just San Jose at one point?
It was 4-1 San Jose.
It was 4-1 San Jose in the 90th minute.
It was 4-1 San Jose, and Doyle said that RSL should have won, which shows you, and I agree with him, which shows you what an insane game this was. And just that's the thing against San Jose is when they give you these opportunities, and Salt Lake had a couple of them with Rubio where he got in, Rubio Rubin, and just you have to put them away right away because San Jose, the way they were playing, I thought they were going to be down 3-4 at halftime, and that was kind of they ended up being up 2-1 at halftime, and that just shows you like the risk that they're willing to take. And I think both goalkeepers, I didn't look at the underlying numbers, but were like their chance creation just rolling the ball out eliminated 5 people. I mean, I think Cade Clark got he should get Marcin Koski, I think, got an assist in that one.
He did.
He throws it to midfield.
Yeah. It's just like throw it out. It was just end to end fast
balls
break.
In play. Yeah. That's 0.5 XGs.
It was just wild. But San Jose, it's hard because for Salt Lake, you have to almost, because I don't know if they have necessarily the guns to go play neck and neck that way, clearly, but it is enticing when you see half the field open and you just decide you want to go for it, but it does throw off your game because then suddenly you've got Justin Glad who's making a run up to go 60 yards because the space is there, but then it also leaves you open on the other side to a counterattacker. You just get kind of suckered into that game, so it takes some discipline or some horses to say that I'm just going to go out there, and when those opportunities come, I'm just going to put this match away. And Salt Lake wasn't able to do that.
According to the probabilities, Salt Lake has to win basically to have any chance at this. They could get in with 2 draws, but it's very low chance on that. But if they win, it's a 92% chance that they would, probability wise, that they would get into the playoffs. So they got to win. They got to get a win.
No, I'm pretty sure that if they win both games, they're in.
Oh no, if they win both games, yes, they're in. But I'm saying I'm assuming they will not win.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Games.
Right. I really enjoyed this RSL team, but Portland at home, KC away.
Yeah.
Not locking in 2 wins for the RSL squad.
I'm not locking in 2 wins by any stretch. I'm saying if they do win both games, they are 100% in because Minnesota can't catch them.
Yes, correct. They would be 100% in. But if they don't get into the playoffs, the enduring image of the season for RSL fans is going to be Jackson Yule shushing them at home in the final week of the season as they lose to the
Quakes. But the enduring image of the year would have been Jackson Yule shushing a crowd in the 90th minute to go up 4-1. They then concede twice. If they had not won that game, that would have been the image of the year.
Number 170 for Wanda. Just want to throw that in.
Yeah, shout out Wanda.
Good call. Good call. Shout out Wanda. 3-1 NYCFC over Inter Miami. Inter Miami are out. Doyle, you said it, but your line in the column from this weekend was pretty much the summation of all this. A week ago, NYCFC were winless in 6, had just 1 win in 10, had sunk below the line, and seemed on course to miss the playoffs for the first time since their expansion season way back in 2015. Shout out Adam Nimich. And now they got the X. They got the X next to their name. 3-week game win streak. Tati Castellanos is the Golden Boot leader. He also leads MLS in goals plus assists. So all you Daniel Shalvey voters out there and Hani Mukhtar aficionados, you're going to be voting for Tati, right? He's number 1 in your rankings because that's what matters, right? Goals plus assists, huh? Yeah. Oh, by the way, NYC is only three back of Nashville right now. So you're going to vote for him, right? That's the deal. It's Tati. It's got to be Tati. His XG numbers, the underlying stats are just amazing. Like, sorry, people are in my mentions arguing about this right
fine.
Now.
It's fine. When we go into these therapy sessions, all three of us charge you per hour. So.
Yeah,
just take as much. It's just your time. You're paying bit. For it.
Yeah, however you want to spend it, it's up to you. MVP again? That seems unwise. We haven't resolved that in how many sessions? But NYCFC now is a different beast than they were before, especially if they can play games at Yankee Stadium in the playoffs. Could this be the year? Could the is the pendulum swinging in the right way at the right time? Finally, for the blue side of New York.
This feels like Kalen territory. Kalen loves the last. Kalen loves the run into the playoffs energy right now.
Can I just say that they
played their last three games. The DC game was at Yankee Stadium, so 6-0, right? And you see just how dangerous they can be at that ground, because DC, we've talked about them already, but they similarly, as we saw this past week, made their own mistakes and
handed it away.
If you do it on a tiny field like that and Tati in form, that can get them rolling. And then the next one is against Chicago and then Inter Miami. So Chicago and Inter Miami, I would say the schedule sort of is helping them in that situation. But yes, to Goss's point about how I feel about this time of year and how I feel about this NYCFC team, is, you know, they have the ability, they have the talent, they have it all, but now they have a little bit of momentum going, and it seems like they have also maybe simplified their formation, at which point I'm going to toss it over to Doyle.
No, I mean, Kalen just hit high points.
One game left.
Yeah.
Yeah, one game left at home against the Union, and that is basically to lock in one, a home playoff game, which we've established here is very, very important, but perhaps do even more. They could jump up based on wins. They could jump over the Union in the standings. They would tie Philly on 53 points, but they would have more wins, which is the first tiebreaker than the Union, if they beat the Union at home. And if Nashville don't get a point, don't win in their final game of the season, they would also jump Nashville. So we're looking at a scenario here where it is possible for NYCFC to basically be on the outs, as we've said, and then to jump in, and Nashville are home against the Red Bulls, which is not a easy game by any means. And oh, by the way, Nashville have won one game since September 22nd. And that game? FC Cincinnati. I'm just saying. The door is open right now for NYCFC. Will they walk through it? They've never done that before.
Winning one game with Nashville stat is a little bit skewed just based off, because they're not like, it's not just like they're just getting run off the pitch losing.
No, they're not. They've drawn a bunch of games. They've drawn a bunch of games during that time. But it is just one win. Only one thing matters in the playoffs, and that's winning games. So we'll see.
Or not losing.
We'll see. How about Philly, Cincinnati? Doyle, you want to wax poetic about the kids?
I mean, the Union sent out like half of the old Bethlehem Steel U-15s and
Venmo on $5.
A few starters, and they took care of Cincinnati, and they did a good job of pinning Cincinnati back, and you know. I mean, Cincy without Lucho Acosta has just absolutely nothing. And the Union are good. They have good ideas in the final third. Paxton Aronson is better at 18 than Brendan was. I'm not sure he's going to end up being a better player, but he's a lot better. He's a lot better in the attacking third at 18 than Brendan was. And he scored a nice goal. Daniel Gazdag has done really well for himself since Jim Curtin has switched to the old AC Milan Christmas tree. They're playing a 4-3-2-1 with Gazdag and either Aronson or Jamiro Montero underneath Kasper Schabilko, who should have had three goals in this game. And then, you know, I think my favorite of the Union kids, of the teenagers, is probably Jack McGlynn, little left-footed central midfielder. I question what a ceiling can be, because he's not big, strong, or fast. He has good, not great defensive instincts. I think, you know, Jim Curtin actually kind of compared him after the game to Harris Madunyanin, and I could see him becoming that type of regista in this league. But there's also, like, if he grows into his body a little bit more, this is another kid that they're going to sell to a Champions League team, because his vision, his ability to slow the game down in those crucial game-breaking moments is just absurd. So, like, the Union are really good. I think they're the second best team in the Eastern Conference, and they put themselves in a position now where they're going to go into decision day with a few guys rested. They got Corey Burke back as well, and they're going to get to a chance to prove that at Yankee Stadium. If they win that game, then they're, you know, they are in very good standing going into the playoffs. And given what they did last year, given how they have grown year over year, just seeming to find a way to get better, it feels like the next step for this club would be a significant postseason run. They already made a significant run in CCL. I thought they held their own against Club America. We'll see if that can translate this November into the playoffs.
TBD. They do have 13 wins. That's important. We've come to find out. So do New York City, but Nashville don't.
Wow. Just throwing it out. Well, Nashville are one. If they draw this coming weekend, they will tie the record set by, I think, the 2013 Chicago Fire for most draws in a single season. I mean, that's just glorious right there.
How many wins do the Revs have against teams with 15 draws or more? That's really the measurement that we should be going on this season. Atlanta United 1, Toronto FC 1. Toronto FC, just late game action. They're like, hey, your playoff hopes and dreams? We're taking 2 points away. What'd you think of this one, Dave? Luis Araujo looks pretty good. Quentin Westberg made him look better on the goal for Atlanta. Joseph did go 90, but Joseph missed some chances in this one. Barco had a just spectacular outside of the boot goal that got called back for offside. But Toronto spoiled it again, and Atlanta, though they have two more games left, they're on 47 points. They are not safe. D.C., Columbus, and Montreal sort of staring at them from down below with the ability to catch them. So it's not ideal. Yeah, not ideal at home against Toronto FC, especially the goal they gave up.
That's, I think, I've been talking about since basically Pineda took over, but especially the last 6 weeks, of just they don't close games. And Pineda has talked about, we're working on our game management. We're working on understanding how to see these games out, and they didn't do it in Montreal. They didn't do it home to Nashville. They didn't do it in this game. DC United, I think, as well. It's just been consistent with them, which is, it's like they're halfway in between. They're not sure if they want to push for the second goal or if they want to sit back and protect it. And therefore, they create these openings and they leave gaps against themselves late in games and they give up points. And so you've got the attacking
talent. They should have been up 3-0 at half.
For sure, but this has been every game. Right? Every single game that you talk about with that, it's not there. None of them were games they were trying to hang on. All were games in which they had created opportunities.
I get what you're saying, but to me, this is not on Gonzalo Pineda, because I don't think they're good enough defending in their box to be a 5-4-1 team that just sort of like parks the bus and does the stuff that Nashville does to hang on to results. I don't think Atlanta has that. I think, like, the whole point, if you have a $40 million attack, is you get them in positions to attack. And that's what they did throughout this game. And, like, Joseph had kind of a stinker, and Araujo was not his best game despite the goal. Marcelino Moreno, I thought, was a little bit selfish, which he hasn't been. Barco was terrible. And if, like, I don't know what to do then if you're Gonzalo Pineda. Because you're putting your team in a situation where your $40 million attackers could score 3 or 4 goals by halftime, and they're not doing it. So I understand what you're saying. Like,
That actually wasn't what I was saying. I didn't realize that's how it came off. I was saying that, which is this is the issue with this team. I don't think there is anything Pineda can do. And that's why I say he's talking about game management in terms of his players taking responsibility and finishing these games off. That's his problem, is the inability of his team to put the final nail in the coffin in any of these games. But it's also why you have to continue to question them over this last week. You can't tell me that they're going to beat the next... It's Red Bulls, and then who do they have on the weekend?
At Cincinnati.
Well, that should be a pretty straightforward...
You started strong.
Unlucky.
You started strong before you did. You cannot tell me!
But again,
at Cincinnati.
But again, you look at Red Bull and their ability to create chances late in games, because they will come at you for 93 minutes. They will not stop. They know they can create chances late. And so that's not a great matchup for this Atlanta United team. And I do think, coming out of this year, with all of these pieces, you have to look at it and say that there has to be some change to the roster. And you have to find probably a way to move some of the DPs around. Because I don't believe that you can feel like they're good enough to build the team you want to for Atlanta.
they're going to do that because it seems like Thiago Almada is done. That's reports out of Argentina. I believe there's a direct quote from Almada saying that the deal with Atlanta is done. So we'll see.
You really trust in those?
No, but
what is,
come on,
what
man,
does
we
the
gotta...
Hungarian media say?
Yeah, right.
That's a good point. We got to ask them. That could help set our, you know, that'll help set
should,
the like.
Should we call the sources that were leaking
rumors.
The Reynoso news 3.5 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever
yeah,
it was?
That's might as well just to see that one did come off. Rapids 1, Houston Dynamo 0. Had the Rapids lost, one of Sporting Kansas City or the Sounders would have gotten a CCL spot, but it didn't happen.
It's
job done for the Rapids. Yeah, dude, we talked about on like the couple shows ago, like Dom Baji, man, like that's one of the most underrated trades, moves, transactions of the whole year. Dom Baji back where he belongs, baby, just getting goals. They also, respect to Rapids, tied their club record for points in a season. So big time for them. Huge, huge, 58 points. I believe that ties the Axel Schuberg Rapids.
Oh. Defender of the year?
The only
wow.
way. Yeah, Axel Schuberg, baby. Best 11, technically, in that season. Not defender of the year, but that's the way it goes. We have Inside Rapids hitting us up, says, can we get a several-minute segment talking about the rise of Austin Trusty and also Jack Price as a best 11 shout? It's more than the set pieces. See Liam Fraser's quote. Liam Fraser. Jeez. Somehow. How did Liam Fraser wiggle his way into this Fraser discussion? Robin Fraser from a couple weeks ago. We are not going to do that full discussion, but I promise you ahead of the playoffs, we will as we preview. I want to go to you, Kalen. Pat Onstead, hired as the GM for the Houston Dynamo. We've been sort of kicking this one down the can until we knew the news officially. We now know officially. The press release is out. What do you think about Pat Onstead as the GM of the Dynamo?
I feel great. Yeah, really optimistic. And, I was watching the game, the Dynamo Rapids game we were just talking about. And, you know, there really wasn't a lot to be optimistic about, frankly, watching the game for the Dynamo. Just really kind of toothless, have not been able to get goals. Desperately need a striker. And it's just kind of felt that way for a while watching the Dynamo play. So it's been nice to see one. I think there was a big sort of desire amongst the fan base, and I'll speak for some former players to say that we'd really like somebody to come in who has some sort of connection to the days of the past or as well as that. But also Pat has been hired for me based on his merit and not because he's like a guy that's, you know, has a connection to the Dynamo. That's sort of just like a cherry on the top and also something that I think will resonate. But he's done it as an assistant coach. He's been a scout. He's been as successful in this role with, you know, an MLS Cup winning team. So that really bodes well. And then just personally, I know Pat, gotten to know him. I didn't play with him, but I played against him and gotten to know him some, and he's just a really intelligent, like good person. And so I think he's going to do a great job. And yeah, there's still a lot of changes that need to be made. I think there is a good, we've talked about this before as far as like which open job might be or prospective sort of treading water type situation, is a good situation. We've said, hey, we think the Dynamo have like some good pieces, but need to actually spend. And I think Siegel's hopefully going to open up the now that they have a GM and they have a manager in place, that they're going to be able to at least now start that process of trying to like build out and spend some money. And, you know, Columbus did that. You know, even if you look at Zellerion coming in and the way that he came in there and changed what they were able to do as a team that maybe wasn't known for going out and splashing some cash on some bigger name stars. And that's been something I know Dynamo fans have been sort of yearning for to see happen in Houston.
All right, let's get to the mailbag. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Ben Wright hit us up. How early is too early for best 11 talk? Do I let you sort of handle the beginning of this? Because you normally specialize in not just one best 11, but a number of them.
Yeah, I actually released the year-long best 11 after the playoffs. So this is too early.
Too early. Usually you do three teams. We are going to do three teams here as well. We're still figuring out how we're going to do that, but we'll all put in our top three best 11s and have some votes. Honors will put
Doyle
them together, and then it'll be an official
Doyle
extra time
version.
Doyle
gets to use his homework for two assignments. What a dream scenario.
Right. Nice.
Sounds like,
nice.
Are getting to use my homework for this assignment.
We'll probably do it before you, just for some cover here. I don't know. We'll figure out how we're going
to
do it.
Philosophically, though, I think that, like, the entire season has to be taken into account, right? Like it's not just
you
the...
You think so? You think you count the... How can you do the playoffs when half the league doesn't get to play and show themselves
I mean,
in that situation? And that isn't...
It.
Well,
yeah, okay, like I think last year only
their fault.
I think last year only one guy who was not on a non-playoff team made my best 11. It's like it's more like all NBA teams, like how they do it. They have all NBA first team, second team, third team, which I like.
That's what we're gonna do, right?
Though,
we're gonna do
though,
three teams.
Though again, they only do it for the regular season. I don't know. Like I've always thought that like you want to take the whole thing. You want to take regular
season.
Here we
go. We have a differentiating factor right now. Yeah. We are going to do the extra time regular season best 11s, and you will do the Matt Doyle full season playoffs count two best 11s.
I'm trying
to figure it out.
One point I want to make is that this has always been easy for me in the past because since I started doing it this way, like 90% of teams in MLS play a 4-2-3-1. So you just toss out 4-2-3-1 after 4-2-3-1. We've seen so much more differentiation in terms of formations this year, like back fives, back threes, 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-2-1 rather, 4-4-2 diamonds are back in certain places.
Christmas trees.
Yeah. So it's been pretty cool.
The jack-o'-lantern formation.
It's going to make it very difficult to, or more difficult to do best 11s than in years past. I'm looking forward to that.
Can I just say,
what would be your first formation?
Dave?
Like what's the best 11 formation?
What is?
Is it still 4-2-3-1? Or is
I don't know.
The,
I think it might be a 4-4-2.
Is it?
I think it might be a 4-4-2. Huh. Last year's Shield winners played a 4-4-2. This year's Shield winner, who set the record for single season points, played a 4-4-2. I feel there are a lot more forwards who have had great years than there are wingers. There aren't a ton of wingers who have had great years. So the 4-2-3-1 might get relegated a bit. I might go 4-4-2 for the first team, 3-4-2-1 or 3-5-2 for the second team, and then the 4-2-3-1 for the third team.
All right, I just love extra time.
Decided.
You know why I love extra time? Because we debate the formations we're playing on the best 11 instead of who's actually going to make the best 11.
Let's get Bruce in here to provide comment on that. You had something?
Skimming right now, looking at the eliminated teams. Okay, so we don't know the teams right on the edge. There's not a ton of players that you'd put in.
That's what I'm saying.
The best 11. I think Georgie probably has a shout if Montreal doesn't make it, and maybe Kamal Miller. And I don't know who else, but it depends then on who makes it and who doesn't. At the end, towards the playoff line. But when you look at the teams that are eliminated already, Miami, Chicago, Toronto, Cincy, all of Texas, and then San Jose, there's not a ton of players in those conversations that should be in these
That's
three
fair.
Teams.
Maybe a third team sniff for some of those guys. Let us know if you're out of the playoffs or in the playoffs, wherever, if you have guys you think deserve to be in consideration for a first, second, or third team best 11. We would love to hear it. Here's Danny T. What top three seed from either conference is most likely to flame out early in the playoffs? Kalen, who are you taking as a flame-out pick?
Sorry, in which conference?
Either conference. Take your pick. Top three seeds right now in those conferences, New England, Philly, and Nashville. I think you pull NYCFC into that because it's all kind of up in the air. And then in the West, it's pretty clear. It's going to be KC, Seattle, or Colorado. Who do you see flaming out? I don't think Colorado can flame out, so I'm going to throw that out there.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Yeah, I don't think that would count as a flame out necessarily.
What? If
that's the question.
They can finish first.
The question
in the
says
West.
Top three. Teams.
They're 8-1-7 at home.
They can finish top of the West. If they're the number
that's
one
true.
Seed,
I guess they could.
And they don't advance. That's a flame out if you finish top of the West. So I mean, look, there have been you could say a victim of their own success in some ways, but I still have questions about Colorado in that sense of saying, okay, well, where do the goals come from reliably? And I think we've shouted out Baji, who I think shown his quality and was really rounding into form, but the fact that number nine position is just that wide open at this point in the season, where a guy could be picked up off a trade heap and brought back in and then suddenly be the number one, says a little bit about the fact that they don't necessarily have reliable goals. See, Barrios, I think, is still the leading scorer. But they have to do it by committee, and that makes me nervous, as always, when you head to the playoffs. So I think that would be the most fragile spot for me. And I think the Sounders would be
the flame out, right, though?
Sounders, yeah.
That would be the, like, down in flames flame out.
I don't think
they
you
haven't
understood
been that good
this
at home
question,
this season. Schmetzer said it.
I think it's predicting which you think will lose. I
which
think
would be
that's
the
question. Not which would be
worse. That was the question.
The Sounders have shown a propensity, though, to, like with that LAFC result, where things go bad, things can go really bad for them in a hurry. And I still have some questions about whether they do have made some mistakes, especially in and around the back line, that you think you thought were maybe out of the system, whether it's Nuhu or other center back.
Arriaga.
Yemar?
Arriaga, yeah. And the other guy as well, sorry.
Yeah, my brain
is just melting. When your brain is not working,
Shane O'Neill.
Stop. Yeah, Shane O'Neill. I think there's, I still think there's room for those guys to, you know, I'm going to learn their names later on, but take some risks and make mistakes. And when things have gone bad for them, they've gone real bad. We saw it in the final last year, and we saw it against LAFC. So I still back the Sounders, but I think they do have that propensity to have things go wrong on a day. I think a matchup could swing in the wrong direction for them.
All right, that's it for us. We've gone through week 34. There is but one game remaining. It's a little strange. Monday night, if you're listening before 10 p.m. Eastern on Monday, Seattle, LA Galaxy at Lumen Field. Tune in Twitter in English as well. Go check that one out. Jordan Morris could be back. He's going to quote-unquote feature. Depends on game states, I'm sure, for Schmetz, but we should see him in this game, we think, and then LAFC Vancouver on Tuesday. Midweek action as well in MLS. We'll be back on Thursday to wrap it all up and get you ready for Decision Day, and then Sunday, Decision Day, as we've already told you. We have the live second screen watch-along show on YouTube and Facebook and MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app. We're just going to be sitting there for 5 hours giving you updates. You'll have the standings live visually, so if you need that sort of update as it goes, which, I mean, what, 12 teams? Still need for 7 playoff spots. We'll have you covered there. And we'll have some interviews coming in from the Western Conference and elsewhere. So tune into that. We'll see you on Thursday. Enjoy your week, everybody. Soccer Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Adios.